Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to the Vanguard. I am Matt Wright, and together you and I are going to be traversing the muddied waters of freedom. It's been a while since I've done an interview. I think the last time I did interviews was back on Writer's Block. I have to say, for the first interview back, since I kind of started doing everything in this new format on my own and whatnot and so forth, this one is one to come back on. Tyler Morrison is a stand-up comedian from Canada. He lives about 2 hours north of Toronto. He is just brutally savage in every stand-up bit that I have seen him in. He is the co-owner of Cottage Comedy. He has the special out on YouTube called Too Soon. And he has two podcasts, one called Fight Stories and another one called Roast 'Em All. And you can find all of these things online. You should definitely check them out. But before we get to the interview, we need to pay some bills. So this episode is brought to you by Mudwater. This episode is brought to you by Mudwater. Mudwater is a coffee alternative, as well as the most aptly named sponsor for this show ever, with 1/7 of the caffeine as a regular cup of coffee. It's made with masala chai, cacao, mushrooms, turmeric, sea salt, cinnamon, and that is it. And I know what you're thinking, Matt, you are somebody who loves caffeine. Why would you be hawking for a company that is advertising less caffeine? And that's because it worked. It's true. I love caffeine. I used to drink 2 energy drinks a day, and now I might have 1 a week. All thanks to Mudwater. If you or someone you love might want to make the switch to Mudwater, all you have to do is head on over to muddiedwatersoffreedom.com/mud to make the switch today. So sit back, enjoy this conversation that I have with Tyler, and go follow him on all the socials. If you stick around to the end, you can find out where all of his socials are. Talk to you soon. So thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate you being here. You are the founder of Cottage Comedy.
Yep.
Yeah, you are the founder of Cottage Comedy. You are the co-host of the podcast Fight Stories, which I checked out, the one with Shane Gillis. That's amazing. Love that. And right now you currently have a special on YouTube called Too Soon, which is currently available, and it is wonderful. And you've got another one coming out soon, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's just in post-production. We've been doing a little bit of extra work to just tidy things up, but it's going to be pretty sweet when it comes out. I'm pretty happy with how that turned out.
I'm personally excited. So I found out about you on accident. Instagram targeted me, and they said, you have to know who this person is. And they sent me the one, and I'm definitely not going to like spoil your joke, but they sent me the one, and I think the cover said something like Tyler's most offensive joke in 30 seconds.
Oh yeah, most offensive joke in 15 seconds.
15 seconds, yeah. And I saw that joke and I died laughing, and I immediately went down the rabbit hole of like everything that you have on the internet. And personally, my two favorite jokes are either my two favorite jokes are either the there should be expecting mothers joke at abortion clinics.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or instead of on milk cartons, they should put missing kids on beer cans.
Oh, that's so, it's interesting that you bring that one up, because that was one that I put it out. I thought it was funny, but it, you know, it never got like a lot of traction or anything online. But I was just checking my Spotify stats for the album version of Too Soon, and at the end of the year, that was the most streamed track out of the whole thing. That people must have connected with that one.
That one, I like when I first time I heard that one, I was like, this is a very, like, this is a well-crafted joke. It's got a good amount of, like, it's got some dad joke in there. It's the right amount of offensive. Like, it's got everything in that joke. I love the way that you did that one.
Well, it's a solution. It's a solution, but it's a ridiculous solution. And for the people that haven't heard it, basically my concept is that I think there's too many missing kids. And what we should do instead of putting missing kids pictures on milk cartons is we should start putting them on beer bottles, because there'll be way more people looking for these kids and they'll be having a good time doing it. So yeah. So anyway, it's a whole thing on that. Originally, though, because I'm from Canada, right? So I'm from I was born in Toronto, but I grew up north of Toronto. So 2 hours north. If you've ever seen, you know, small town Canadian shows like Letterkenny or Trailer Park Boys.
I was going to say, yeah, I think everybody that watches my show is a Letterkenny fan. I think they would have to be at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I know guys on that show. Like, I'm friends with guys on that show, and I, it's definitely, you know, you grow up in a small town in Canada, it certainly hits that way.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, that bit though was originally, in Canada, because in Canada we don't drink milk in cartons. So like there's milk, it comes in bags in Canada, which is just kind of ridiculous. Like, you get a bag of milk,
okay,
and you cut the corner of it and it goes in like a jug, and you pour it and it comes out the little milk hole. So I was just saying, like, in America, like, they have, you know, pictures of missing kids on milk cartons, but we obviously do not give a shit about our missing kids, because we drink our milk in bags.
Right.
So the bags clears like the ghost of that dead kid. Right.
Yeah. So, like, the joke of the milk carton thing, I've never seen a picture of a missing kid on a milk carton ever in my life.
Yeah, it used to be a thing, and then it disappeared.
Right. Like the kids.
Yep, exactly.
So like, I knew you were from, I knew you were in Canada, because I've watched all of your stuff. And you tell a lot of jokes in Toronto. I assume you're a Blue Jays fan, because I see you wear the hat pretty often.
They break my heart.
You know, I'm a Red Sox.
Cold black heart.
I'm a Red Sox fan, so I understand that. But so I've got to ask, what is wrong with your prime minister?
I mean, this is a guy whose dad was the prime minister,
right,
of Canada in the 70s, and, you know, came up in a very liberal household. I mean, his mom was out partying with the Rolling Stones. It was like a public scandal. I was actually just performing last night at a venue in Toronto called the Alma Combo, which is a legendary venue in Toronto where the Stones were playing. I'm pretty sure it was the weekend where they passed around Trudeau's mom.
So was that before or after she went and visited Castro?
That's a good question. I feel like it might be before. But I mean, it's pretty public, you know, all the stuff that was going on was like, it was a controversy when the Stones played in Canada,
right?
And were partying with her. They busted Keith, I think it was on heroin, and then they made it so he, you know, they detained him in Canada, and eventually they had to play a charity benefit show as a mea culpa to let him leave the country. That was all from Trudeau's dad, that was like, you know, putting the screws to him. So it was a very public controversy. You can Google it and look it up. It's pretty wild.
So, man, I don't like name dropping on the show very much, but I will on this one, because the saxophone player
drop all the time.
No, I get it. The saxophone player for the Rolling Stones from like 1968 until he passed in 2014 or something like that was a man named Bobby Keys. And okay. I was good friends with his son.
Oh, cool.
So I met Bobby many times, and he would brag that because Keith Richards was his best friend.
Yeah.
And he would brag that he and Keith Richards had been arrested on 6 of the continents.
That's so cool.
Together. And I wonder if he was arrested in Canada.
Canada.
Yeah.
We should look that up. I think that would be really interesting for you, especially having known.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Know if he's part of that. Yeah, it's so wild to think. So he came up in this life of privilege, but he came up with, when he was growing up, his mom was very much, from my understanding, you know, out looking to do her own thing. I don't know how close of a relationship it was early on. I think they're much closer now, but
right.
You know, I don't think he had a normal childhood. Let's just say that.
That's fair.
You know, and a lot of white kids grow up wanting to be black. And he just acted on it. And because he comes from a place where, you know, you're allowed to be anything you want to be. And yeah. And now we live in a time where you can be anything you want to be. And you know, he wanted to be black because it. So, and he wanted to be brown. He dabbled. He kind of went. It was a slow transition. It was like when Michael Jackson is the opposite Michael Jackson.
Right. He went the opposite way with it. So,
but they're both child molesters. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Oh,
I didn't say that. I was just fucking around.
I mean, I don't know why Trudeau's wife left, but nothing would surprise me.
Who knows what's going on there. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but I'm right. Sure there's a lot of happy guys right now that you know, someone's going to be smoking a Cuban tonight.
So like with all the stuff going, like, and I, to be 100% honest, watching your stand-up, I have no idea where you align politically. I have zero idea where you align politically, and that's totally fine.
I don't align I don't align politically with anything. I just make up my own mind on issues as they come. And, you know, like, I'm not right about most of the shit.
Oh, that's right. Oh, no, that's kind of, so that's how I feel. Like,
look at my gambling track record.
Right. So yeah,
I don't play, you know, partisan politics where you got to be on this team or that team. If Justin Trudeau makes a good decision that's good for our country and it's good for me, usually it's just, I give a fuck if it's good for me. I'm just, right. You know, a lot of people don't want to admit that that's why they, you know, they vote one way or another. But really, if he makes a good decision that benefits me, I'm like, fuck yeah. But if he makes one that doesn't, I'm like, you know, fuck this guy. That's just like, that's how we all really are. But right. It's so magnified in America with this two-party system where it's, you know, you got to be on this team or that team. And it's just like the politics is treated like sports, and you got to pick a team, but it's played out like theater. And it's really dramatic down there. And up here, it's gotten more. Like, we're very influenced by the American media. And I think there is like this thing that Canadians have where, you know, they shit on Americans, but they secretly would love to be, you know, at least have some of what America has. There's, I mean, I think America's a great country. It's just lost its way. And it's very magnified now because of, you know, there's a camera on every street corner, on every cop's, you know, vest, on every dash cam, and everyone's watching it online. We're just seeing the most fucked up shit. It's just, you know, it's right, slow motion.
Like, so to that, like, I don't know if America has lost its way or America has always been this way, but now we actually have an opportunity to see it because there is a camera in everybody's hand and that's filming it. Everything. So yeah, we might be the same country we've always been, but we don't have the image
the population is so much bigger in America than it is in Canada too. So you're seeing, you know, we have some of the similar problems, but it's not as amplified because there's fewer people, right? Now the gun thing obviously is a little wild down there. And America really is the only country with that type of gun problem that is, you know, that's that flagrant. like, we don't have that type of mass shooting situation here yet.
Right.
Well, yeah. the, the, the culture doesn't revolve around guns, only in certain neighborhoods.
Right. Yeah, and I'm a person who believes that I should be able to own whatever weapon I want to own. Like, there should be zero limitations. That's just who I am. And I also know that I would never use those weapons against anybody else in any way other than defensively. But, if somebody, like, I don't feel that if my next door neighbor here doesn't think that he should own any weapons, I think that's on him. If you don't want to own any, that's on you. And if you're like, hey, can I have your help protecting? I'd absolutely help him.
But, yeah, like I grew up in a family, was like a hunting family. We're blue collar, you know. There were winters where it was lean, like, you know, hunting meat fed the family for the winter. So like I grew up around that. I respect utilizing guns for what they really should be intended for, and not violence or hurting people. But at the same end, you know, bad people are always going to get guns. And so you should be allowed to have a gun to defend yourself. Like, why the fuck would you, want to be unarmed? If you're living in a place where there's significantly higher gun situations, there's a bigger probability that you might face a situation. Then, yeah, but I think people should have to be trained. They should be trained on the firearm safety. They should have to pass some sort of mental wellness test in a, like, over a certain period of time. It should be regulated like that. I don't think, it should be as loose. But I do think it should be your right to fucking, to have those. And I just don't look at them as like a thing. Like, I look at it a little bit differently, because we just don't have, there's just not right. that volume of guns here.
No, and like I get that, and it makes sense. And like my only issue, like, I don't think that we should have to, like, I think everybody should train on whatever weapon that they have. I don't think that there is a way that you can like enforce that properly. But also, like, I don't think that there should be a test, a mental faculty test that you should take in order to.
Should be allowed to get fucking wild with them.
So my issue, like, with like a mental faculty test to own a weapon is, what if the person just doesn't like you that's taking the test? Or what if the person, especially being in the polarized political nature that we are, yeah, they're like, okay, are you a Republican? And the person's like, well, yeah, that's why I want to buy these, 14 guns. And they're like, oh, yeah. Well, I don't think Republicans are mentally capable of owning guns, and then they just don't allow.
What if it's an AI thing? What if it's an AI thing that solves it? I don't know, man. Like, I think it's a wild situation that you guys have down there, that these things keep happening, and it's scary to think. But
I mean, you did come up that we are finding our own solution for figuring out how to solve the gun issue here, and that's, we keep making obese children, and eventually their fingers won't fit through the trigger hole. I laughed very hard when I heard that. But so, like, obviously, like, we obviously have massive differences in, depending on where you live. Where I live, I'm in Florida. I can own basically whatever I want as far as weapons.
My brother lives in Florida. He's doing
Nice. And you guys, I understand. I know that Trudeau recently passed, you can't have any pistols unless you've already been grandfathered in. And there's like some hunting, like, ways that you can kind of get around some of the issues. But one of the big ones that I've seen, and I don't know how this has affected you, but Mike Ward, he's a massive Canadian comedian. Mm-hmm. I think he's massive anyway. I know who he is.
Yeah, Mike Ward's a very big comic in Canada. And like, he's got a fan base in English, but also a very large French fan base. He does comedy bilingual. The guy's super talented and wicked funny.
Yeah, wicked funny. He's a very funny individual. So he got in trouble recently. This was a few years ago now that I think all of it.
It was a little while ago. Like, it's gone on longer than what people may realize. Like, time just goes so fast. But yeah, right.
Yeah. So
Mike Ward, go ahead. Yeah.
So the entire situation, I know, like, got wrapped up in like just under a decade. It was like 9 years from like him telling the joke to the Supreme Court ruling.
Yes. So for people that aren't aware of the Mike Ward situation, so in Quebec, Mike Ward, I think it would have been Montreal probably, but he did a joke about a kid named Le Petit Jeremy, the little Jeremy, I guess.
I was wondering why, like, it always had
his name is.
Yeah, it always said Le Petit in front of his name, and I was like, is that some French thing, like little Mister? Like,
okay. Petit means little, right? So right. Le is the. Right. So yeah, the little Jeremy, but it really means little Jeremy. If you were to translate that to English, it's little Jeremy.
Okay.
So he had a facial disfiguration. It was like some sort of disease that like made his face a little bit wonky. And Mike Ward did a bit about how, so actually this is just to set it up a little bit further. So he was a singer. He would sing. And his parents got him singing for, I believe he sang for the Pope, and I believe he sang for maybe Celine Dion, like some big people. I'd have to double check, but like he got popular because he sang in front of these big figures, and he became a public figure by doing that. That's how he got into the pop culture lexicon. That's why Mike Ward would even be bringing his name up, and everyone would understand in the audience who he's talking about in that region, in that city. And so and in the province of Quebec, obviously. So he was pretty popular. And so Ward did a joke about how he donated money to Le Petit Jeremy's cause, and then the kid's still alive. And like Mike Ward, he's like, I feel ripped off. Like, turns out the kid is just ugly. Like, that was sort of the joke, I guess. It was just like that Mike felt cheated that he donated to this disease, which is so hyper, like it's hyperbole. And and it was taken seriously. So I guess the kid and the parents made a claim that he was being bullied in school because of the joke. The joke went out, I guess, viral in that area, you know, and people saw it, and they claimed that he was being bullied because of the joke and this and that, which I kind of find, I don't believe that. Like, if you have that sort of facial disfigurement, you're probably, and kids are pricks.
Yeah, you're not getting bullied because of a joke. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't think these kids are watching Mike Ward and like bringing it. I don't know. I just don't feel like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. This is just what I'm, my
right
take on it, but I don't know. It felt disingenuous. It felt like they're trying to get some money. And so what happens is in Canada, they took it to this thing called a human rights tribunal. So a human rights tribunal is this kangaroo fucking court. It's absolute horseshit. And where they sue him saying that he, you know, under the Human Rights Act, that he's damaged this kid beyond belief because of his words. And so it goes to this trial, and it goes back and forth. And I think he overturned it. Like, Mike ended up winning in the end, but it took so long. And it's very scary in this country that we have this loophole for fucking pussies and shysters who want to, you know, take things like comedy and spin them into anything that they, other than what it is, right? To take that out of context and make it a literal thing, I think it's absolutely sacrilege to do that. Is comedy dirty? Yes. Is it dark? Can it be mean? Yes. There's always a victim in every joke, but ultimately, humor is born from a reaction to what's happening in the world. And
right,
and sometimes when you're punching down, sometimes it's not the victim of the joke that is the actual like brunt of the joke or butt of the joke. It's you, like, it's like your boorish character like if I'm picking on a kid who has a facial disfiguration, I'm almost amplifying my shittiness in a sense, like, so like I'm making fun of my own shittiness because we all have that shittiness inside of us.
Right.
And we just kind of, we all try and disguise it. We don't want it to be noticed. So when Louis C.K., this is why Louis C.K., I swear to God, other than there was, you know, he did really well with connecting with his kid stuff, but it was the shittiness inside that everyone fucking bottles up that they think he started saying that out loud. And he'd say things that are like, that's an inner thought, like a bad thought that you have that you would never let other people say. Well, Louis would say it, and Louis that's would say how it.
And
people yeah, connect. Like, yeah, I fucking feel that way too. Like,
right? Yeah, there have been a lot of Louis jokes that he's got one where he's talking about, like, you know, he's got his two daughters. It was back when he was still married, and he had a special out back then, and he was talking about how embarrassed he was to. God, I hope my mom doesn't watch this episode. But how embarrassed he was when he was like, I have to go down to the basement to masturbate. And then, like, there's never been a roller coaster of a high, like, masturbating. You're like, yes, this feels amazing. Then the moment you finish, it's just like, what is wrong with me? I'm down here in the basement like a troll. And, like, he would tell jokes that people could connect with. I mean, like, I've had
this stuff that we're hiding, right? So there's these feelings and thoughts that we like automatically, we have them, but we suppress them right away because we do not want anyone to fucking know that we think that or feel that. And it's just like, oh, that was bad. I shouldn't have thought that. Right. But he's like, oh, he tapped into, oh, people think this because I think this too. I'm not just the only fucked up one. And he starts rolling the dice saying that stuff. Well, but he ends up like painting a picture of him being a piece of shit, and that's what's funny. So yeah. Mike Ward, what he was doing by punching down on Petit Jeremy, he was painting a picture of like his own like shittiness, right? And so ultimately, who are you, like, if you're watching that, you're laughing, but you're not laughing that Petit Jeremy's got a facial, you know, disfigurement. You're laughing because Mike Ward's such a piece of shit that he would say that. It's shocking. It's surprising. You don't expect it. And it makes us laugh because it's like, oh, we're all pieces of shit together. None of us are perfect. And I think that that's what gets lost when people come after comedians for bad jokes. And or not even bad jokes, but like jokes that someone might deem bad or offensive. I think, right. You know,
and
it's like it's interpreted on your own whether so a joke's good or bad.
Right. And but when Mike Ward makes a joke like that, and, you know, saying, you know, the only reason he sang for the Le Petit Jeremy sang for the Pope is because he was dying, or however he phrased the joke, which I will never be able to hear because I don't speak French. And I think he only did it in that one special. But like when the family comes after him, then I feel like that almost brings more attention to Petit Jeremy having the fucked up face.
That's right. I think it made it worse. How do you grow up with that on your fucking jacket? You know what I mean? Like that's like they made it worse for sure. Right. I think they made it worse, and that kid's gonna have to live with that now because he's etched in stone, and people who would never go against a kid like that probably were against him and his family because they thought it was a cash grab. I don't know. It just seemed like it was ludicrous to me, and the fact that this country allows that fucking shit to go on, we're lucky that Mike Ward was the guy that they chose because. In, you know, these ambulance chasers that go after that type of thing.
Right.
I mean, Mike Ward had the money to fight it. He's a very successful comic. He does well. And most comedians don't make as much money as, you know, as a guy like that, who's a top tier headliner. And if it happened in Vancouver before Mike Ward, years back, there was a comedian, Guy Earl, who was doing stand-up, and he got into an altercation with a lesbian couple, and there was like they were heckling and disrupting the show, and then one of them I think broke his sunglasses. There was water, someone got water thrown on their face and someone got their sunglasses broken, but someone also got called a dyke. And so that ends up in a human rights tribunal. But it was on the I think it was on the mic when there was like these words exchanged. So it was in the context of a comedy show. It may have been a little bit closer to a Michael Richards situation, right, where the comedian lost a little bit more control of the room, whereas Ward's doing his set and he's killing. So comedians who would back up a guy like Mike, even though it's like the same thing technically, what happened in that room, like it was the comedian's not as strong or as respected. Those type of things play a factor in the court of public opinion with the comedians who, you know, so there's comedians who like didn't side with Guy Earl because they're like, oh, he's not even a good comedian. Well, that's not the point of this. The point is that like anyone can fucking do this to us and it's not good. Guy Earl lost his livelihood and he couldn't I think he couldn't get a job, a regular job for a long time. It was really tough on him and his family. Right. And he didn't have the means to fight it the way that Mike did. So this could happen to anyone, and it's not really a good situation. Ward winning his case is a very good thing.
That's
for
a good thing. Yeah,
Canadian
no, absolutely.
Comedy and free speech, because it sets a precedent in a good way. But yeah, this has happened before, and it's I hope to God it never happens again, because it's not right. And, you know, we should treat Canada doesn't the country, like the government, doesn't recognized comedy as an art form, and it should be recognized as an art form. The respect that this is, you know, one of the oldest art forms, and it's very important. You know, Canada likes to brag about all of our you know, great Canadian comedians that moved away from here to go to the US and get famous, and you know, well, we could have fucking made them famous here too, but you know, there's not a lot of
great
homegrown support.
The greatest comedian of all time is from Canada. The greatest,
yeah, Tyler fucking Morrison.
I'll get second.
Who, Norm MacDonald?
Yes.
Norm MacDonald?
Norm MacDonald.
Fucking man.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to show you this. Check this out.
All right.
I gotta pull this up. Since we're talking Norm. So I got this. It's an autographed Norm MacDonald LA Dodgers celebrity game bat. I picked this up for the studio, so I'm gonna get it put in a little case on the wall.
Yeah, Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald, one of the greatest of all time, man.
He
if not
in
the.
Yeah, in my opinion, he is the greatest of all time. I like, you know, I love Carlin. I love Pryor. I love Carlin. But Norm MacDonald will always be the greatest, because he was the one that got me into watching stand-up. When I was watching like Comedy Central as a kid, I saw a joke by Norm MacDonald, cool, and I said, that was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
The one thing that I don't, that you don't hear, I don't know. I've heard, I've had conversations with friends, like a lot of us love Norm. I never met him personally, but what, in addition to his stand-up, which was very funny, his stand-up was awesome. But like he maybe wasn't my favorite stand-up, but overall he was great at everything. So he was a great stand-up comedian. And you could argue that he was in that top five all time, top 10 all time, you know, whatever, like that's interchangeable for anyone's personal taste,
right,
but there's no denying he's in that conversation. Saturday Night Live, one of the best Weekend Update guys.
The best Weekend Update.
He was
update.
The best. Dennis Miller was really good. But
Dennis Miller's my number two.
Yeah, me too. Norm and Dennis Miller. And so he's the best Weekend Update guy. He's the best talk show panelist. I mean, him and Rodney.
Anytime he was on Conan, lights out. The way that he would
he's
make
in that. He's in that conversation.
Yeah. The way that he would make
and then look at the movie,
Letterman.
The way
he made
and
Letterman
dirty
laugh.
Dirty Work?
Dirty Work is an underrated classic.
It's a masterpiece. It's a comic masterpiece. And it's so low budget. And it's so funny. That it just shows that you don't need this crazy huge budget to make a great show. Like, just hilarious.
I think Artie Lang is like the only person from that movie still alive.
which is crazy, like that he's the one.
That he's the one. Yeah, Bob Saget not there anymore because he directed. Because Bob Saget directed it. Norm MacDonald passed away, as we all know, from cancer. Chris Farley passed away a while ago from being Chris Farley, also Canadian.
There's a couple people still alive from that. Like Rickles did pass away. He was in it.
Yeah. Who was the dad?
Jack Warden. Yeah, Jack Warden. Yeah. He's from, you know, the grandpa from Problem Child, Big Ben. Yeah. Hilarious. Yeah. He I think he's passed away too. Laurie Metcalf wasn't in that. She was in Beer League. Sorry. It was Christopher McDonald still alive.
That's right. Yeah. Chris McDonald.
The bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
God, that movie's so good. I watched Sandler's that movie not long ago.
Sandler made a cameo. He was the devil in that. Right. It's just such a great movie, man.
Everything about that movie.
But yeah, perfect. So he did everything he did, he at least did one thing just like great. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
even
and
his
so
TV
like,
shows.
They're good. Yeah.
They're good.
And the podcast, we're forgetting, like his podcast is one of the best of all time.
It is. It's so great. Who's his partner's name on the podcast? I always forget that guy's name.
The guy Adam Egret.
Yeah. When Adam Egret, I almost as a joke today was going to start this off with, so I've always wondered, where do you get your ideas? Because he would ask that question to every famous person. I was like, I'm certain he's. I don't know how big of a Norm MacDonald Tyler is. I'm not gonna.
I might not have picked that up, but I have watched a lot of the podcast.
Adam would ask that question to everybody, and then they would be like, "What kind of stupid question is that?" But you could just continually do it, and it was hilarious. But going back to like the free speech thing, like, and. It is awesome that Mike did win his case, and you were featured on a CT. I'm going to try to say this correctly. CTV W5 investigation. Is that the
name? That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And the way that I watched it, it kind of looks like it was like a Dateline 2020 or something.
It's like that. It's usually okay, cool. It's they do this investigative journalism on a lot of topics. And so when they asked me to be on it, I was like, "Oh, is this a sting? Right. Are they gonna set me up?" And I had no idea. And I was, but I'm not afraid of that. Like I'm like, okay, whatever. If I stand by what I say out there, and if I say something wrong, and I know I'm wrong, I don't have a problem apologizing for being a fucking idiot. But if I'm trying to be funny, I'm not gonna apologize. So. Good. But I'll say this.
Nor should you.
I didn't know what to expect. They came into my home and interviewed me and, you know, with my kids. And I gave them full access, got it set up so they could come down and record at the comedy club when I was headlining. And, you know, they can rip jokes out of context and do whatever they want. So I gave them a lot of access to my world and put trust in them to do right by me. And I think that they absolutely did. And they're pretty fair. And it's kind of hard when, you know, myself and Russell Peters, who's also featured, and Mark Breslin, who's the founder of the biggest comedy club chain in Canada, Yuck Yucks. We're all on the same side here, like with how we feel about comedy. It should be no holds barred. And that's the space. This is the one space where you should be allowed to say fucked up things. And that's why we go there.
And what the owner of the comedy club, Breslin?
Yeah.
I appreciate what he said. He goes, anybody that comes in here, I'm never going to censor what they say. I'm never going to censor what they say. But I do believe that if the comedian says something that offends the audience, it is the audience's duty to walk out. And I went, I agree with that 100%. Like if I'm at a show and somebody says something that offends me so badly, I'm not going to like make a stink about it. I'm not going to be like, fuck you, man. Give me my money. Like, no, I paid for a show.
You can't change the channel.
Right.
Just leave.
So I'm going to leave. I feel the same way on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If I see something I don't like, I don't have to fight with the people who are doing it. I literally just go, just scroll and it's gone. And I don't ever think about it again. So I don't understand why people would think, oh no, now I need to change what this person is saying as a comedian. But so with people like with what happened with Mike Ward, have you toned, like you've had to tone down, I'm assuming, what you say? No?
No. Fuck so, that.
Hey, good for
I
you.
I will never tone down what I say. Like, you saw my special, right? That was right after the Mike Ward shit. Like, that was during the Mike Ward shit was still going on, I think. So, like, too soon when I shot that, that was at Yuck Yuck's Comedy Club, too. That was at Mark's. Okay. That's the first place I ever did stand-up when I was 18, was at that club. So it was really cool to be able to shoot the special there. And, you know, and now that I'm headlining it and that, it was pretty sweet to do that. But I haven't toned down a fucking thing. I mean,
so
what are they going to do?
No, I mean, that's fair. So, but like the way that you kind of framed it in the CTV interview or the W5, I'm not sure. CTV.
Yeah, is W5. Yeah, CTV is the network.
Okay. I just had a CTV, W5 investigation. I was like, I have no idea what any of these numbers mean. So in the W5 interview, you said that instead of just going out hard at the beginning, which you try to warm them up a little bit more. So
sometimes.
Has it made you change the way that you're like putting the joke out there? Do you feel it out at the time?
I feel the energy in the room before I go on. I usually know what the temperature is based on the crowd, based on I get a vibe. If it's a whole bunch of grandmas, you know, I do what I call the shawl count. If I see more than 5 women wearing shawls, I know I'm fucked.
Right.
Behind enemy lines. And we got to work this a little bit different. But the thing is this, like, it's not that I never pander to an audience, but I do want to win. I do want to kill as hard as I can for every crowd that I'm in. And I understand that I'm not a famous comedian. I'm not necessarily a household name.
Yeah.
Yet, hopefully one day. But yes. But so a lot of people, when they come to a comedy club, they don't know what to expect. They don't know who they're going to see. A lot of people are morons and don't, you know, go on YouTube and at least check out who's headlining. Right. So if I'm on the show, it's my show. There's going to be people there that want to see the type of comedy that I'm known for. But then there's people that don't know who the fuck I am. And I do want to win with the whole crowd. So like most of the time they don't know who the fuck I am. So I do have to find a little bit of common ground at the start and get them to trust me. And then I just take them as far as we can go. That's sort of it. Sometimes though, it's like, yeah, you come out and do the most ruthless joke you can right off the bat and see where they are. Like sometimes you come out throwing the high heat, but it's really just a case by case scenario. If it's billed as like a dark and dirty show and properly advertised, I have no problem coming in and just getting out the machete. Or if I don't like the fucking crowd, if they've been a bunch of little dipshits to the other comedians on the show, like we're going for fucking blood right out of the gate. Like that's just, but yeah, it is a case by case. I mean, you know, I want to make fans that, you know, walking people out the door is, it happens. Like when I shot Too Soon, that was a little different because that was my special that I was taping. So I'm not just doing it for the audience in the room. I'm doing it for a global audience now.
Right.
So I have to do what I want to put out to the world, not just this one room. And if they don't fucking like it, too bad for them in the room, because this is going out everywhere. And as I've seen from the response that Too Soon's got, I made the right call. But it was kind of crazy recording that because I had done all that material on the road, or most of it, like a lot of it, some of it, when I do a special, I do some stuff for the first time ever. So it's just like first time hitting the stage fresh. So it feels a little bit like more wild to do. It just, there's a little bit of an extra edge that you play with when you do that. But when I was doing the other stuff on the road, working it out and stuff, I was able to use my A game that I've built over the years to kind of cushion that material.
Right.
And then when it came the week of the show, I did that material that was on Too Soon all together for the first time ever with none of the old stuff propping up any of that shit. And so the first night, like Wednesday night at Yuck Yucks, was an absolute bloodbath. Thursday night, absolute bloodbath. Like, it's causing some real reactions with the crowd. Like, people are getting upset. Friday night, murdered. Friday night, I wish I was recording. It would have been like a clear-cut, nice kill set. Saturday is usually you get two shows to record. So that's when right. you want to record, because you get two cracks at it. And it doesn't, you know, cost you. It's on a shoestring. So we go, okay, Saturday's the night to record, obviously. Well, we get this fucking crowd. There's a bunch of stiffs in that crowd. And they're getting upset at the material. And they're, you know, vocalizing it. You can hear people getting upset fucking recording. I walked over 25 people at the show. Like, they're leaving. They're heading for the exits, trying to get their money back. Like, the dude in the wheelchair, they had to carry a guy in a wheelchair out.
Oh, just shit. In the basement. So the dude in the wheelchair, he left?
Oh, yeah, he was mad. He was upset. And so there's like a whole bunch of shit going on. And then my fans that were there to see me are getting into it with the fans that are getting upset, or the people that hate me. And then my fans are getting kicked out because they're too drunk. At one moment, there was this guy that should have got kicked out. We didn't put it in the special because it really was an exchange that kind of went nowhere. It just didn't like fit. It was like absolutely the wheels were coming off the show. And he interrupted a bit that I really wanted on the special. So we took the bit from the late show, and we didn't use a lot from the late show. We used mostly show one, where all the crazy shit was going on. But we took that one and put it there because it just made it was just better for the product. But this guy gets into it with me. And at that point, there's so many people either getting kicked out or walking out and trying to get their money back that all the staff and doormen and like security, like there's no one. This guy should have just got thrown out, but no one could deal with it. So like I'm handling this old man standing up like screaming at me.
Which man?
And at the end of the special, and this, I mean, this is a spoiler alert, but it's been out for a little while, so fuck it. But at the end, when I'm walking off stage, if you really pay attention, you can see him start talking shit to me as I'm walking off, and I blow him a kiss. Like, I just look at him and go, like a bad guy wrestler move. And in my head, I go, oh, this is going to ignite this old fuck. This is going to ruin his night. Like, because he hates me so much. So I just blow him a kiss and keep walking off the stage. I go right up to the green room. Like, you're not going to even, like, get to me. Like a true villain. And he, I knew that I was going to fuck with him, but when I did that, I didn't see it, but my camera guy, he caught it when he was editing the special. He goes, oh my God, when you blew that guy the kiss at the end, the old man, he flips you off.
Yeah.
I was like, you gotta check this out. So I blow him the kiss and you just see him just give me the finger. So I go zoom in on that slow motion and on a freeze frame of him with the middle finger up. That's how we're ending the special. And it that's turned out, like, it's one of the, for me, it's the most punk rock fucking comedy moment that I could have had on that special. And it was really funny. And it really captured the feeling of the night and the act. So that old man wanted to fight me after the show. And like, he's trying to
get jokes. To
me. I wasn't around.
And nothing, so nothing in that special, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody because I loved it.
I'd pump an old man too. I'd fuck him up.
Nothing in that special, I could see why that would have upset like that. Like, and I suffer from something that a lot of people don't suffer from anymore, but like it's hard to offend me. It's
Down almost syndrome? Hot.
I'm not Shane Gillis. But I... Like, I don't get offended by much. Like, it is hard to offend me. And if I'm at a show and somebody's saying something, like, it's not going to offend me. I may not find it funny, but I'm not going to find it offensive. And I'm definitely not going to want to, like, punch the comedian or fight the comedian. Like, I've seen terrible.
Well, this old guy, his situation was a little bit different in the sense that he didn't speak English very well.
Okay.
He was English is a second language. He's an older gentleman. He would have been in his, like, I'd say he was probably like 73, 74. Like, he was an older guy.
Was French his first language?
No, I don't think it was French. I think, I don't know. I don't, maybe Greek, whatever it was, he was, I think he felt that he needed to be protective of the women that were with them, and they're hearing all this filth. And really, he doesn't understand any of the shit that I'm saying, except for the swear words, except right. for the cuss words. And so he's just hearing me say fuck a whole bunch of times, and I can't believe this. So, like, in our exchange, I'm like, buddy, you don't even speak English. In what language would this even be funny to you? But so he was the one that was taking the most offense. And I, you know, that made the crowd fucking tense up because they're getting a little...
Right, because anytime that the comedian's about to fight an old guy, the crowd's going to get that. They're going to feel
buddy,
that.
Buddy, if I could have legally got away with football kicking him in the fucking head while I was on stage, I would have, man, because... All I'm thinking, I'm paying for this fucking special to happen, and all this shit's going on around me, and this guy's fucking up my money. That's all I'm thinking the whole time. This guy's fucking up my money. He's going to cost me however many grand that I fucking dumped into it. And, you know, just zero respect for the craft, for a craftsman.
Right. So... You do a ton of the roasts. Like you do a lot of roasts, yep. And you do the I guess the rap battles of stand up comics. I don't know what y'all call them.
Yeah, roast battle. I've been on the Roast Battle Canada. So Roast Battle started at the Comedy Store in LA, but then they franchised it around around the US, and they're doing it in Canada. But there's a TV version of it in Canada.
Okay.
On our version of Comedy Central, which is, you know, the CTV Comedy Network or Comedy Channel, it's called now. So yeah, that's a thing that I got brought into, which is fun.
So when you were like trying to decide, you know, what you want to do with your life, was it like you were really good at making fun of your friends, and then you were like, okay, I'm just going to go up on stage and insult the audience, and then. Like,
yeah, I always wanted to be a comedian. I always wanted to be a writer, actually, comedy writer.
Okay.
From when I was a kid, when I was in third grade, my teacher started realizing that I had a fucked up sense of humor, and like that's coming home on the report cards. And my parents were pretty well aware of it, but it was starting to get. But then I also had like a writing ability, and like I was writing novels by the time I was in. Like I just, and I could write it like handwrite. And this is way more advanced than these other kids. And so they knew I had like this writing gift, and my internet connection is a little fucked up here. So
yeah, I kind of lost you for a second. Yeah, I lost you for a second. But yeah,
am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. So yeah, I had, they noticed I had a writing ability. So at one point, I started really getting into comedy, and it was after I heard Adam Sandler, What the Hell Happened to Me, and they're all gonna laugh at you, those
they're
comedy albums.
Laugh at you.
Like
they're all gonna
so
laugh
fucking
at you.
Great, man.
Yeah.
We'd listen to these and we'd be laughing so hard, and just when we were in like seventh grade, just little bastards laughing at the most horrible shit. And it really fucking got me. Like I started doing my own sketches, and I love David Letterman. So I'd write my own top 10 lists about anything.
Well.
I just create them. And I just figured out the structure because I was a good writer. And I figured out like the beats of how to write a top 10 list. And I wrote like hundreds of these, and I'd fucking tell them to my friends, they'd be laughing. And then I started writing like insult jokes and shit about people. And I was getting in a lot of scraps when I was around like 12, 13, I got into about 20 fist fights. And then I'm like, it's going to be a lot easier if I can shut these fuckers down with jokes. Cause I wasn't a big guy. I was doing all right. But I'm like, I don't want to fucking have to fight every one of these guys. So I can start like saying, you know, shit and shut people down and get people laughing on my side. Then those guys kind of, they see that the audience is against them. That's how you destroy a heckler. Is the heckler, you know, calls out, you make the whole crowd laugh. They feel very small and alone in that situation. So I was doing that when I was in like grade 7, grade 8, just around. And then I got really good at it, you know, figuring out how to psychologically take someone apart. That's where it is. When I do a roast, like, I know the nerve to hit. I know, I find the weak spot instantly. And I'll find whatever's the thing that comic is insecure about, and I will expose the nerve. And if I want to, like, if I really want to fuck them up, I will. And it usually happens.
You had one of the roast battles that I saw. one of the roast battles, I mean, I've seen a couple of them now, but one of them I saw, oh God, I can't remember the girl's name, but it makes the joke. But you Crystal? Said, yep.
yeah, Crystal Ferrier. She's a hilarious comic in Canada. I love Crystal.
Yeah, and you said Crystal is the only champagne that her boyfriend can afford, but or something. I don't remember how you phrased it, but yeah, it was fitting that her name's crafted.
Crystal, because Cristal's the only thing her husband. What's that?
It was fantastically crafted.
Yeah, Cristal's the only thing her husband could afford to pop at the club for under $100.
That's it. Yep. And I was just like, that is wonderful. I've seriously become a huge fan of you. It's great to get the view. It's great to get the viewpoint of somebody who's actually in Canada, because I don't know Mike Ward. So I can't just like message him. This is the first time you and I are talking in person, but like we at least were having a dialogue. But it's good to get the viewpoint of somebody in Canada on what that's like and how it is. And it's good to hear that you are going the route of, no, I'm not changing anything. And no, I'm not going to apologize. Now, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with, I don't like this comedian. I don't find him funny. He's Dane Cook 2.0, in my opinion. But Matt Rife, don't like him at all. But he made some joke. I don't even know what the joke was. And people found it offensive. And they were calling for him.
The wife being joke.
Was it? I don't even know what the joke was. I only know the joke was about it was.
Okay. Yeah. So the joke was about how they went to a diner and the girl serving them, or the hostess, I think is the hostess, had a black eye. And it clearly, like, you know where that came from type thing. And
right.
And she was married to a cop. The joke was you really want to have that as the face of your operation? At least put her back in the kitchen. But then, okay. Obviously, if she's got a black eye, she doesn't know how to cook,
right?
And so that was like, I thought it was a fucking like the that's, way, and I'm just paraphrasing his bit. I thought he nailed it. Like, I'm not a huge Rife fan, but I haven't done a deep dive on him. Yeah. I don't hate the guy. He's doing his thing. He's working hard, just like anyone else. And yeah,
he reminds me very much of Dan parties. He reminds me
sucking
of Dan
the bachelorette. If he's sucking the bachelorette parties out of the comedy club so we don't have to deal with him, that guy's the fucking Pied Piper, and we should all fucking carry him out on our shoulders. Because who wants that fucking audience, man? Right. Like, it's a nightmare. He's taking every single... And he knows it. He kind of courted it, but I think he got what he asked for in a much larger way. And this is part of what he's doing. He's even said, like, he's trying to find the real comedy fans now, and he's sort of weeding out the people that are just there for the novelty. And right. So a joke like that and a response like that's going to weed out the phony fans, and ride or dies are going to hang.
And his response, smart. where he said, this is my apology video, and it was a link to like the special ed helmet. I was like, man, I was like, that is the best joke he has ever made. And it made me respect him a lot more.
It's a double down. And the guy's a real comic. And I got nothing but respect for a guy that's doing his thing. And, you know, there's room for everyone in comedy. And I think that's what a lot of people forget. I mean, Hannah Gadsby, not for me, but Hannah Gadsby has a fucking huge fan base and got a huge platform and was allowed to reach an audience that... You know, if this was the 80s, that never would have happened.
That's true.
So not that it's my cup of tea, but there's room for everyone. And who are the big boys now? Who are the guys that are selling out arenas? Andrew Schultz, Soon to be Gillis. Like, Gillis is going to be selling arenas soon.
Gillis, Nate Bargatze.
Bargatze, and Bargatze's a clean comic. So
he's a clean comic. Not I even love Bargatze.
He's not competing against those guys. There's room for everyone, and you know, you can be a prop comic like Carrot Top and be making a fucking fortune in Las Vegas with your residency. There's room for you. People want to see it. As long as you're, you know, doing your thing and
you're
not running your mouth,
you won't get checked in. You're opening for somebody soon, aren't you? You're opening for...
I don't think I have... I opened for Schultz a little while back.
Okay, I thought I read that it got pushed to 2024. I thought I read it got pushed to 2024.
No, what my Ottawa dates got pushed. My Ottawa Yuck Yucks Comedy Club dates, I was headlining there. But because I was opening for Schultz on the Life Tour, I just swapped out with Tom Green came in and filled in for me in Ottawa. Right. So yeah, I'm coming back, Ottawa. I fucking love Ottawa, man. I haven't been there for a while. So
if anybody from Ottawa sees this, capital. I will be absolutely amazed if anybody from Ottawa sees this.
They might
this.
Watch if I'm pumping it. I got people in Ottawa.
Hey,
not Justin Trudeau, though.
No. That's weird because he doesn't follow me either. I bring up
he's never in Ottawa either. He's always on vacation with our fucking tax dollars, going back to his fucking roots in Cuba.
Right, he's gonna go hang out in Cuba with his grandfather.
Getting his he's down in Jamaica getting his fucking cornrows done.
He's got to get the natural tan so that way he doesn't have to use the boot polish anymore.
He should be in Kingston, but that's the Canadian. Penitentiary. We got. That's where he should be getting his cornrows done.
Oh man,
have you seen the show? I think it's called Mayor of Kingstown.
With Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing show. So that show, I'm pretty sure, is based on Kingston, Ontario, which is like a big prison town in Canada. It's when we do fight stories. My co-host John Moses and I, John's a comedian too. He lives in New Jersey, but we travel all over and we go to these different cities. We do stand up in small towns and we always are out at the bar and we're like, who's the toughest person in this town? And then someone's like, oh, and then turns out like this dude, Pierre's like been in like 2000 fights and he's a fucking animal. And when we, the first two episodes.
So Letterkenny's true. Like Letterkenny's not lying about this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, Letterkenny's dialed into a little bit. It's pretty comic booky. Like it's a little bit inflated for comedy, but Kingston was like the city that like gave us so much gold. Like any episode we got from Kingston for fight stories, it's like we've had prison guards. The city's like prison guards, ex-cons. It's got like 3 major prisons, I think, maybe more. I know that they shut one down. The big one got shut down, but I think they made another one. And it's like cops, hockey players. It's just like everyone is tough in this fucking town. And so Hugh Dillon, are you familiar with who Hugh Dillon is?
I don't know who.
So Hugh Dillon is an actor, but he's a rock star first. So he's a Canadian rock band called the Headstones. That are like huge in Canada. And he started a movie called Hardcore Logo, and he was in a show called Flashpoint, but he also got in with, Taylor Sheridan?
Yeah.
Is that who? Yeah. So Taylor Sheridan, I'm pretty sure.
He did Yellowstone and all those. And then he also has the Sylvester Stallone show. And then
yeah.
He
and
also
Mayor of Kingstown.
Frank, yeah.
So Mayor of Kingstown, Hugh Dillon's one of the producers and one of the actors in it. He plays one of the buddies, one of the cops. He's one of the cops, not the bald guy. And so he's a great actor, but it's based on his hometown of Kingston. So he know, like it has his fingerprints all over it.
Very cool.
It's a really cool city. Just like if for fight stories, it's cool anyway.
Right.
So I can go there on vacation. Go in the summer. It's cold as fuck in the winter.
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, I live in Florida. I'm not going to anywhere near Canada in the winter.
No, dude. No, there's some cool shit to do in the winter up here, though. It's nice.
I'm certain.
But you're a fucking Florida boy, buddy. You can't stand your ground when it's fucking slippery.
So you want to, all right, so this is fucked up, but the famous stand your ground guy, George Zimmerman
Lopez.
No. George Zimmerman, the guy that down here in Florida, he didn't grow up in Florida. Neither did I. I didn't grow up in
little
Florida.
Little gay either. Guy, right?
No.
Oh, little gay George Zimmerman. Yeah. I know little gay George Zimmerman.
Yeah, little gay George Zimmerman. But he's the guy that shot Trayvon Martin.
I know.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I'm assuming you know this. We don't live in the, even though you have
that's
the
for American, the listeners.
Right, for the listeners in America who don't know who George Zimmerman is. He and I went to the same high school.
Oh, no shit.
In a different state. And he was 3 years behind me, I think. And I knew his
one of you brother. Shot for the stars.
Right. I knew his older brother, and I was like, man, that's got to be a real rough time for him now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, so yeah, that's my connection to George Zimmerman. I went to his high school.
Didn't he got in trouble for like hitting his girlfriend with a wine bottle?
Yeah, I think so.
I did a joke about it on one of my it was like in 2015 when it happened. I think I did it on like an album, but like of course that pussy drinks wine. Fucking guy.
So I've got a buddy, his name's Joe. He loves stand up comedy. And he has been sending me stand-up comedians for years. Just watch this clip. And most of the time I ignore him, but because he sends me so many, it's I can't keep up. But so I was sitting with him and he went through your entire library with me the night that I discovered you, because I was sitting next to him.
Oh shit.
And he was like, and he was like, oh my God, like we've got a Schultz, we've got an Andrew Schultz out there, and we've got a Nate Bergazzi. And now we have somebody out there who's just like a great, like in your face comic that will just doesn't care what he said. And he was so excited about you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he was so excited. He's like, cause you've got Schultz who does like the crowd work, and he's like, you know, he's kind of more jovial and stuff. And then you got Bergazzi, who's just clean, and he does everything clean. It's great to have somebody who's just in your face and like does not seem like he gives a fuck. And I was like, man, I can't wait to see what else this guy does. And I honestly can't wait to see what else you do. I've been looking forward to your new special as soon as it's done with post-production, ever since we got connected initially.
Yeah, man.
I look forward to everything you got going on. I can't wait to see everything that you get. Anytime you roasted, I'm blanking on the wrestler's name, the blonde. Woo!
Oh, Ric Flair. Yeah. Ric Flair.
I was going to say Randy Savage. I was like, that's definitely not Randy Savage. Like, I look forward to seeing your roasts. I think that you are immensely talented.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, the Flair roast, if people want to check it out, like it's on Fight TV. It was
oh, no
broadcast
shit.
On, yeah, Fight TV. It was Triller. It was a pay-per-view that Triller put on. We shot down in Nashville with the guys Starcast. And it was really fun, man, just to be part of that. I mean, I'm a huge wrestling fan, and especially the old school wrestling. I haven't really watched a lot of newer wrestling, but I grew up on all that shit right up through the Attitude Era, and getting to be around that circus and hanging out with Flair and Kid Rock, partying with Flair and Kid Rock and like all these dudes, like this is fucking amazing.
Is the Attitude Era like early in Taylor Swift's career?
Oh yeah, yeah. Is that what she is? Is that one of her eras?
I have no idea. I just know she has the Eras Tour.
Oh yeah, the Eras Tour. Yeah, yeah. Oh man,
I have no clue. I don't listen to Taylor Swift.
Oh buddy, I'm taking my kid. I got the tickets. I got the tickets. Strictly through sports gambling. Because they sold out in Toronto so fast, you couldn't get like a regular price ticket. I went through the app. I went through like the ticket resale app. I think it's called StubHub or some shit.
StubHub, yeah.
I'm like trying to get four tickets because I want to take my two daughters and my wife. And I get to the end of it. I see it's like $2,000. I'm like, this is insane. But I'm like, I guess I can swing it. And then I get to the end and I realize it's $2,000 per ticket.
Per ticket.
I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. $8,000? Not happen. Like, $8,000. Britney Spears would fuck me for that much.
Today, yes, Britney Spears would.
I'd ask her dad. I mean, it'd be...
You've got to.
I'd be good.
You still need his permission.
Yep. Yep. But, I was like, this is insane. So I'm like, the only way I can justify spending any type of money on these tickets is if I do it through strictly through the spoils of my degenerate gambling problem. And So I go on my gambling app. And I see I got $300 left in the app. And this is in the summer. I'm like, okay, UFC's on. I'm pretty good with this shit. And it's Aljamain Sterling fighting Sean O'Malley. And I love Sean O'Malley. I kind of have a feeling that his style is going to be a problem for he's a huge underdog. And I'm like, okay, I think he might catch him. Like, because Sterling's going to be shooting and O'Malley's deadly accurate. So I go, okay, let's throw $100 that he's going to knock out the champ. But then I got $200 left. I'm like, fuck it. If it's happening, it's happening in round two. So I YOLO 200 on round two knockout. O'Malley, because he takes a while. Like first round, he just gets his range, figures out.
Right, figures the, guy the angles. Out. Yeah.
And then round two, sure enough, he knocked out Aljamain Sterling. And it's like, it's insane. So I think I won like $3,600 just off of the 300. And like, I don't know what my wife and kids are going to do, but I'm going to see Taylor fucking Swift. I got money for beer. It's going to be awesome, man. I'm going to wear my tiara. The attitude era is coming. I'm going to do some DX crotch chops. Imagine getting kicked out of a Taylor Swift concert for doing the suck it.
For doing the suck it.
You'd be gone, eh? If you're like by yourself.
Yeah, you're a middle-aged man by yourself at a Taylor Swift concert. They're just absolutely...
they think you're retarded for sure. Right. Oh, he's just a make-a-wish.
Well, man, hey, I appreciate you coming on. I've never ended an interview before, but I actually have to go back to where I was before I was
all here good, brother.
The tab.
All good. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you reaching out, and this is a lot of fun, man. Anytime.
No, this is beautiful. And you know, keep me informed on whenever your new special is coming out. I'll let everybody in my audience know. And
should be soon. I'm really hoping it can be this month. We're right at the finish line.
That'd be Christmas present for everybody right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it'll be fun. And then, you know what? I have a lot of new stuff that's already ready to go. So if people coming out after that comes out, people will be able to see me live and it'll all be fresh. And I'm probably ready to shoot a new one now too, because this one's taking a while to get out.
And if you're ever down here doing shows down here in Florida, your brother lives somewhere in Florida, which is a big fucking state. But if you're ever down here doing
Where are you in Florida?
St. Pete.
St. Pete? Oh, cool. Yeah, my brother's up in the Tampa area. So he's right
around
Tampa.
he's right next door.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So he's out there. So yeah, man. No, it'd be great to get down and do some shows. I gotta work on some visa stuff so I can come down there and do some more. Cause it'd be
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm starting to get a lot of Americans reaching out from them seeing me on Instagram and that.
On the gram. The gram's been pushing you.
The gram's been doing good. TikTok flags me on everything. Fuck China.
Shocker.
These fucking... They're just so narrow-minded.
I'm so glad you said minded.
Minded. just don't like my slant that I put on things. fucking chinks.
I'm leaving all of this in. It doesn't matter.
I mean, that was funny. I don't give a fuck.
That's what Tony Hinchcliffe got in trouble for.
I love the Orient. I love them. They're good people.
It's the exact thing Tony Hinchcliffe got in trouble for.
Oh, like, yeah, I don't know. What the fuck?
That's funny.
How did they know what he was saying?
So
they speak Chinese.
So the comic that came on, I know the story. The comic that came on before him was an Asian guy here in America. I don't like it wasn't Dat Fan, but it was somebody Dat Fan like. And for anybody who has no idea about stand-up comedians, they're like,
no, I remember, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you know the story?
We kind of got set up. Like it was they were
planning he massively to, does. Yeah.
Yeah,
he,
they're planning to take Tony out, which is bullshit. And Tony can come across as like, you know, he's got an ego, but Tony's actually a really sweet dude. And he's super cool to me. I love Tony Hinchcliffe, man. He's done a lot for young comics. You know, actions speak louder than words, I think. Yeah. In that guy's case.
The other guy whose name I'm blanking on, what they've been doing down in Austin for young comics is amazing.
Yeah, totally, man.
I respect the hell out of it, and hopefully we get some great, great new stand-ups coming up from the next generation.
I think so, man. It's a new scene that's really emerged, and they've created a culture around that city for comedy, and it's perfect. It's great. I think I'm gonna go down there and check it out soon.
Dope. Well, yeah. Thank you so much. Do you have anything you want to pitch to the people?
Follow me on social media, Tyler Morrison 123 on Instagram. I got a YouTube channel, so please subscribe there and leave me a comment. Just share it with your friends. But my whole special, Too Soon, is available right now. You can stream that for free. And, I also have a special from 2019 that I'm going to be rolling out next week that has never been, it's not a full special. It's like a 16-minute killer club set that I really would love people to check out. Just a little thing that I've never put out in full. So it's going to be available for people to check out called Burn Beautiful. The Village. And I think you'll enjoy it too. So
I can't, man. Yeah,
so
I can't
that stuff's on YouTube, and I have a Patreon. So anyone that wants, you know, to see if you check me out first, and if you like it, I have all my stand-up specials are on the Patreon, patreon.com/Tyler Morrison. I have a bunch of like bonus roast footage, uncensored clip stuff that like is getting me flagged on these regular platforms that they just tighten it up. I mean, there's just shit. This, you know, no one's listening to this fucking podcast this deep, so we're fine.
There's gonna be like four people who do, and they'll like, they won't comment, they will message me directly and be like, I was listening.
Yeah, well, that's okay, we're just fucking around here,
right?
But it's I have all the Patreon's the place for, you know, I put my, you know, all my worst shit on there because it's all fucking savages in there.
So yeah, everybody follow him on all the socials, follow him on give him money on Patreon, and make sure you check out Too Soon. It's fantastic. And you upload a lot on Instagram, like you couple a day.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of, I have like five specials, so it's like,
oh, shit.
Like I've been doing this a while, man.
Right.
Yeah, not all of them are good, but
so everybody go check him out, and everybody go check him out, and you should do that today.
Right on.
Well, yeah, no, man. So thank you all for tuning in. That was my interview with Tyler. I hope everybody out there enjoyed that interview as much as I did conducting the interview. Next week, we have we've got another guest coming on. He is a mainstay in the Liberty Movement. Everybody be ready, because Jack Lloyd is going to make his first ever appearance on Muddied Waters of Freedom. And I, for one, cannot be more excited. So have a great week. Have a great week. Be safe, you know, all the normal stuff. And tune in next week for a brand new episode with Jack Lloyd. And remember, until then, where we're going, we don't need roads.